Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its authors' intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special two-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.
You're listening to Working, the podcast about what people do all day. I'm Jacob Brogan. This episode, we're taking a brief break from our ongoing series about professions imperiled in one way or another by the Trump presidency. We'll be back with more of those interviews in January, but we have a seasonal diversion for you first. Last week, we received a special visit at the Slate Studios from a man with a long white beard and bushy eyebrows. A man dressed all in red and white. He calls himself Santa Ed, and for decades, he's been entertaining children and adults alike at parties throughout the Christmas season. He leads us in this episode that you are about to listen to through a typical Santa party, sharing a few of the tricks of the trade that he uses to entertain, delight, and amaze children. Then he spoke with us about the difference between entertaining those kids and appearing at corporate functions, while also talking about why he doesn't do mall events, even though they might make him a little more money. And, of course, we went into what he does for the rest of the year. It's a little more complicated than going up to the North Pole to make toys. And he reflected on the progression of his career. Then, in a Slate Plus Extra, Santa Ed talks to us about how he responds when his clients want something a little spicier from Santa Claus. If you're a member, enjoy bonus segments and interview transcripts from Working, plus other great podcast exclusives via Slate Plus. Start your two-week free trial today at slate.com/workingplus. What is your name and what do you do?
I'm Santa. You might call me Santa Claus.
Okay.
And I bring presents, but recently I've done a lot of things coming and going to people's parties.
Uh-huh. So which came first for you, looking like Santa Claus or your first job performing as Santa at these parties?
For many years, I was working with youth. I'm a social worker, and I worked at community centers, camps, and during the 60s, I grew a beard. Somebody asked me if I'd be a Santa, and I said, sure. They were going to pay the rental, and I said, okay, the rental's $100. $180, I could buy the thing.
The suit?
Yeah. I was just going to buy it. I knew I'd like it.
So you bought a suit. When was that? How long ago was that?
1970 or 71.
So you've been growing the beard for almost 50 years?
Oh, yeah.
And you've been doing Santa stuff for
37 years.
So how many versions of that outfit do you have? Are you still using the same one that you bought back in the 70s?
Oh, no, it's gone. But I have maybe three major versions. One of them that you just to sort of give to if I have to hire somebody else and I'm not available or I'm too expensive for somebody else.
Uh-huh.
And then my regular costume, I put real fox fur on it.
Oh, wow.
I try to make myself look as normal and as real as not theatrical as possible. My fox fur is a little mottly, and it's a little wild, and it just doesn't look like a theater. And then occasionally, like last year, I worked for the Nationals. And I said, well, do you want a real fur or a fake fur? You know, we have to have fake fur because for some reason they thought the pet people would be upset. I said, well, they don't mind you having leather in your balls and in your gloves and everything. But, okay, so I have a really nice fake fur one.
Is fox fur a common thing for Santas? Do most Santas have this fox fur component in their best version of their costume?
Maybe a tenth of a percent has a real fur.
Okay.
I just, you know, I find that I can get real fur a lot of times by old fur coats that I can get at a thrift shop.
So you make these costumes yourself?
I make the line, the fur on them.
Okay. So why is that part important to you? Is it that it helps you get in the mood? I mean, presumably the kids don't know the difference between real fur and fake fur.
Oh, it's to impress the adults.
Okay.
And it's get me more jobs.
Yeah.
And my whole idea that I have for myself is to look as natural as possible. So my beard is long. I cut it off a little bit, even though it's pretty long. But I look normal. And then I put real glasses on that are like Ben Franklin glasses from long ago. Mm-hmm. And I just do lots of little things. And I don't use a huge belt buckle. That's not a normal thing. I have a 1-inch, 1.5-inch belt buckle that's beautiful. And anything that will make me look just like a real person that happens to wear a red suit.
So what does a typical party with kids go like for you? How do you start to get prepared for a party that you're doing with kids today in 2016?
Oh, to prepare, I make sure my costume is on right. I add a little bit of white, too. I have a few gray hairs, and I have to cover them. But if I have lots of time before, I'll pluck out all those gray ones, and that's better if I don't have to use the
kids white. Prefer a pure white-haired Santa?
Well, they don't see the difference.
Yeah.
But I see the difference, and the parents can somehow see. But more, if somebody's giving me a hug and they get white on their face, that's one of them. And then if I happen to be outdoors and it rains and I got the wrong kind of makeup, I'm in trouble.
So you apply makeup too?
That's what I say, to cover up the to augment the whiteness because of the maybe 2% black hairs.
So you'll add color to the beard, but you have to be careful because it'll run if the weather's inclement.
And then if it's raining or if it's real hot, I use clown makeup, which is goo. It's terrible stuff.
So do you dress up before you leave the house when you're getting ready, or do you get ready once you arrive? I mean, are you like driving to these parties in a Santa costume?
95% I'm going to be mostly dressed. A lot of times I don't put the coat on. Uh-huh. I try to do things to keep from having to change the fur frequently to wash it. So I do things like when I get ready, I put on 2 totally cotton T-shirts. I cut the top of the out where they can breathe. And then between 2 gigs, I will put on 2 clean T-shirts.
Because it's sweaty in the costume?
I don't want it to be sweaty. And then as soon as I get out of a job, I take the coat off and let it dry out and go on to the next job.
So when you first arrive at the party, you're feeling like Santa, you look like Santa, but how do you establish your presence as Santa when you're getting ready to walk into the room?
Well, with your permission, I don't knock on the door. I get people, if it's at all possible, to leave it unlocked. And I burst in, and I have a long string of real sleigh bells, all different tones of bells, like 25 bells, all different sizes. And I'm coming in, jingling the bells, and I know ahead of time where they are in the house. And I go in, and the parents, usually the parents at least, and sometimes all the adults are amazed that, oh, it's Santa Claus. Look, here he is.
And, so the parents help out in that way.
Usually. Yeah, you can't depend on them, but they usually know that they want to be surprised, to have their kids be surprised.
If you're just bursting into people's houses, have you ever accidentally gone into the wrong house?
Never.
Never. Do you give a big laugh?
Seldom. The laugh is commercialized. The only time
there's,
I do
there's ho, no ho ho ho.
The only time I do ho ho ho, if I ask somebody if he's been good an adult, and he says, yeah, then I either say, oh, yeah, right, or I say, ho, 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 you know. But I don't think it's Santa doing ho, ho, ho. It's just been somebody, you know, like Santa having a fat belly or Santa having coming down the chimney, all these. This is cartoonist Nast made things, and they cut on, or Coca-Cola decided something, and it cut on. But the old Santas, they looked much more human, and they didn't all wear red. They wear long robes, which I intend to make a long robe sometime.
So you don't ho-ho-ho, but what's the first thing you do when you come into the room and the kid's there?
After they've seen me, then I do a little walk around, and I greet everybody. Oh, hi, how are you? And for the little kids, oh, look how you've grown up. Oh, you must be 6 inches taller than last year. Really.
Do you see kids from 1 year to the next?
I do, but that, I mean, they saw, I saw them as Santa, no matter who they are.
So they imagine you've seen them.
Yeah,
no matter what.
I
it's about
like
creating
I've
that
seen
story.
Them before. Yeah. Or an adult, have you been a good boy? And then I do the ho-ho. And, you know, I mention something about their weight or something. I just talk about things. And an older person, I said, oh, you're not scared of Santa anymore.
Are kids scared of Santa?
Kids who are around 2 years old. The little babies, they're not scared of me. They don't like being away from their mother, but they're not scared of me. But two-year-olds, I would say 30% are scared. If I had a fake beard that's much more glorious than mine, there'd be at least half would be scared to death.
After you've gone around and greeted the kids, what's the next step at one of these parties?
Then I invite the children to come and sit in front of me. And I have made arrangements to have some place that I could sit with something as a backdrop. And sometimes they have
a tree or something like this?
A tree or a fireplace, but something that I can sit in front of and have it be in focus when they're close. And then sometimes I have to take my own chair. If they have a big chair that's comfortable, I'll push it aside with all the decoration and take a fold-up chair, because if my butt is below my knees, it's almost impossible to get kids up on my knee and down, and it's just hard to...
So you need a lower chair just
to... I need to be able to lean forward and sit up straight.
Huh.
So anyway, I have a chair, and I sit, and then I ask the kids to come in front of me and sit on the floor, and then, most important, I get all the adults, sometimes this might take a little while, to stand or sit in their own, bring their chairs up behind the kids, because if I let them stay at their tables, they'll talk. And you know how talking would be.
Yeah.
And then they will also find out, to their surprise, that they're enjoying my program. And the way I do the program, I involve them as much as possible.
Yeah. Involve the adults.
Yeah. And then I usually talk a little bit about what's going on at the North Pole and ask them if they know. And in the process, I'll get around to introducing a story. If it's the Grinch or the Night Before Christmas, I do my own rendition of it. If it's the Polar Express, I have a child sit on my knee and open the book and show the kids the pictures. But I'll do that, and then...
So you'll lead them through, you read a Christmas-themed story to them?
I will say it. Can I tell you?
Sure,
And I don't recite a poem. I tell a story that happens to be in rhyme. Like, I don't say 'twas the night before Christmas and all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. That's fine. But instead, 'twas the night before Christmas and all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. And the children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads.
So After you've read a story, after you've performed, really, a story, what's the next step? Are you delivering presents?
Well,
are you listening to kids' wishes?
I ask them frequently. I said, you know, would it be all right with you if I gave you one of your presents today to sort of lighten my load on the sleigh? Would that be all right? And usually they say yes.
Kids love presents.
Yeah. And so then I start having them come up. Usually I get the youngest ones first because the little ones, their parents might know that half an hour has been enough and she needs to leave. So I'll bring the little ones up and then I'll have them one at a time and I'll come up. And if possible, if they give me presents that are wrapped with their names on it, the parents write on a little post-it note. I have them put little cues that I can take off on the present underneath the name, and they'll put something like Honor School Award or Broke Foot or New Baby or Fight's Brother or something that I can then talk about to the kid. And I'll know him, and the other kids will see me as being this guy that seems to know what's going on because I know who went to Disneyland, and I happen to know that somebody failed his math test, and, and I just know all these things. And the negatives I always treat in a way that won't hurt them.
So you never deliver coal?
With adults, occasionally. Occasionally. But with the children, if it's a negative— Like, oh, I know it's awfully hard to not bite your sister, isn't it? But you're working on it, aren't you? And, you know, I make it where, and that does two things. It keeps them from being terrible about it because they're working on it. And also, it helps the parent who hopes that they won't be biting their sister as much. So I will try to turn the negatives into a teaching thing.
This is a moral quality.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Santa Ed. After this brief break, he talks to us about the difference between entertaining children and performing at corporate functions.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
So how many kids are at these parties usually?
Someplace between 2 and 80.
80? That's probably too many to do gifts with, right?
No, I would have to have an hour and a half instead of a half, 1 hour. Or I might do 2 hours.
Yeah.
But I always want to have at least a third of the time, not just them coming up and sitting on my knee and getting a present. Because to me, that is what so many, that's all they do. The Santas are what I call photo Santas or mall Santas. All they do is over and over again, have somebody sit on their knee, say a few words to them, give them their little present, and take a picture. And I try to have them see me as more of a human being, somebody that's understanding and loving and has surprises. And they'll see me doing lots of things. And I think that this helps bring out the fantasy. And I help people see that it is all right to lie to children. If you tell them there's a Santa, if you tell them there's a tooth fairy, you tell them there's an Easter bunny, it's not bad because it is helping them develop their fantasy, which later, when they get to be up older, their imagination will be better. And imagination is what the key to success is.
So it's okay to lie to children, but surely some children don't believe you. How do you deal with a Santa skeptic when you get one at one of these parties? Do you ever have a kid who's like, he's not real? Santa's not real?
Well, depending on how they do it, but frequently it might be, well, a lot of people feel that way, and I don't know why. But yeah, you can feel that way, but Santa is real. And you know that Santa doesn't really come down the chimney. Santa enters through your heart.
Or through the front door of the house.
Yeah. Oh, and I wear a big key. That's most Santas don't, but some do. I wear a big key, and they might say, "What's that big key for?" Oh, I say, you can't depend now. There's apartments that no chimneys, and if there's someplace without a chimney, on Christmas only, I can wave. It has magical powers in this. I can wave it in front of the door, and the door will pop open.
it's a good magic item. Is there ever a religious component to your Santa visits?
Only if they specifically ask this. If maybe 1 out of 100 will want me to bring in the Bible story and things like this. But I treat Santa not as a Christian thing. He's a druid. He was invented long before the Christian people started adopting him as something they would do.
Do kids ever confide in you, tell you what they want, share their wishes?
Oh, yeah. When I ask them, one of the things I'll be asking them, what's been going on with you, and if I know a little bit, I'm, how was high school or whatever? And then I'll say, what do you want for Christmas? And they will sometimes tell me something. So if they don't, I'll say, well, why don't you just write me a letter and I'll send it up to the North Pole? Mm-hmm. But if they ask me a question that is personal, they might ask, well, all I want is my mommy and daddy to get back together again. What do I do, Well, that's something you should talk about your mother and dad again, because that's not my ball game. Or if they ask for 100 impossible things, I'll just say, oh, those are wonderful wishes, and I'm sure I'll get you something good. And I very, very seldom will promise them anything, because I don't know if I can keep that promise. Mm. Sometimes the parent will say, please let him know he's going to get his sled or whatever, and then I'll do. But if they haven't told me this, I'll say, well, I'll do my best. Or if I find it in the warehouse, I'll put your name on it.
Yeah.
But I know I'll get you something good.
Do you ever pass that information that they tell you back to the parents?
If they haven't listened, that's their problem.
So what is the next step? What comes after that?
Well, depending on the party, but if possible, I have a little thing that I do that I hope that more Santas would do, but I've tried to get other Santas to do it. But we're all prima donnas and we have our own gig. Everybody would do this, I think it would help the world. But my little thing is, towards the end, I have the adults. I pull the adults up. I want to talk. Come up, and I want to talk to you. This is the adults' area. I will say, one of the reasons I came here is because I knew there'd be good people here, and I need help. Santa needs help. I have helpers. You've seen them at the malls and the department stores. Have they done a good job? Because I'm the real Santa, and I've got helpers. Are they doing good? Give them a hand, and everybody gives them a hand, and they'll say, but I need more help. And there's one little job that I thought, since I knew there'd be good people here, that somebody might want to help me. If it feels right, I'm going to give you a bow. And I have a whole bunch of bows, some big, some small, all kinds. I have them pick their own bow out and take this bow home. And then when you're home and when you're all alone, when nobody's around, not even your spouse and not your children, go through your most cherished possessions and pick out something that's been very special to you. And maybe with some reluctance, wrap it up in a beautiful package, put lots of love on it, and then write down from, and maybe you could put a secret friend, our secret Santa, or a non-amus. But put a name down that's not you, and then, most important, listen, give it secretly to someone you would never have given a gift to, and never, ever let anyone know where this wonderful thing came from.
So before you leave, you're trying to spread a little extra joy.
Well, I think that if there are lots of people out there with these gifts that they don't know where it came from, they might do something themselves that way. And if if it became a tradition that people all over the world were getting anonymous gifts that they could really love and not have to answer anybody, not have, like, see, so many people feel that Christmas is sort of like a barter. Well, if you give her, we got to give her something about $15. If we give her too much, she'll embarrass because she didn't. And if we give her too little, she'll be a little hurt because, you know, she's going to give us something about $15. And that's a bartering thing. Now, we don't do that with the children, do we? No, with the children, we bribe them. if you're good, you'll get something from Santa. But I want it to be where somebody is helping you. Mm.
It's mostly in-house parties for kids that you
do. I would probably a little bit over half, but I do lots of company parties. Like a lot of companies have a Christmas party for their employees. They'll have a dinner, and they'll bring their children or whatever, and they'll have Santa come. And sometimes they want me to be in another room with the children. I hate that because I want the parents to be involved too. Mm-hmm. But whatever, I go to adult parties. I go to children's parties, and I do corporate parties.
How do you convince someone, a potential customer, to hire you, to take on your services?
I basically want them to see that you can get more than what you were planning on. If you get me, you'll get more than all the things I said about a photo Santa. Mm. And I will try to sell them that the kids will be believers, the adults will be entertained, and that the advertisers, the people that are paying for it, will feel they got a bargain.
Mm-hmm. How do you normally find the clients that you end up working with?
When I had the time, this year I didn't put the time in. One, I know some places do big parties. Mm-hmm. I can make a lot more money and hit a lot more people if they're big parties. Like if a big company is having a yearly party, some of them quit doing their yearly parties because they started losing people that would get drunk and be in accidents. So they quit. But the smarter ones decided, we're going to still have our yearly party, but if they're drunk, they give them a set of keys, and this is your room number, mm-hmm. and you don't drive tonight. But on the other hand, if I know that some places I should call, and I know that in July and August, I should be calling the big hotels and talk to the human relations person and find out when their staff party is going to be. They're going to have a four-hour staff party, and it's a time for them to give to those underpaid workers something that they've been serving. You know, they'll get the lobster and the steaks and everything that they've been serving.
So you reach out directly to people.
I go to the human relations people and ask them if they want a good Santa.
What about families? How do they find you, or how do you find them?
Word of mouth is a lot. Mm-hmm. And then some of them get me on the internet, but it's harder now because the internet is getting so commercial that the things that used to get you in that first page, so many people have paid money to get higher than you. Mm-hmm. That I get a lot of my jobs now because I registered with a marketer, mm-hmm. and they get top listing for some reason.
Interesting.
But I think that mostly if I know that, like a nursery school, that I should call them about September. And I know that automobile dealers and big real estate people, they will need people, and I'll call them maybe August or September.
Well, we'll put a link to your website on the page for the show. Have you ever worked as a mall Santa? Have you ever done that kind of Santa-ing?
Never as what you would call a mall Santa. I did one time an opening with Tyson's, mm-hmm. and I did one singleton at Saks Fifth Avenue. But I'm not a mall Santa. It would kill me to have to sit there all day and do the same thing and not be able to use some of my talent, like, you know, not being able to put on some magical effects, mm-hmm. which I love to amaze them by doing something magical, not as a magician, but as showing how we magically do things in the North Pole.
Like what?
Well, one of them, I tell them that other people besides the Grinch have tried to stop me from bringing Christmas. And one time, the Bad Elves kidnapped me and grabbed me and took me on the other side of the big iceberg and tied me up with some special rope. and left me there. And I was afraid I wasn't going to get to my sleigh. And then one of the good elves found me and brought some friends over. And they did their magic and they pulled on the rope and it came free. And I had two of the kids then help me by tying me up. And then other kids would try to pull it free. And then I said, no, you got to say the magic word. And they would say hocus pocus. And no, that doesn't seem to work. And then finally we try on the third try where they've seen them pull hard. Then when they say Merry Christmas or something like this, they pull and that same rope that didn't come free before comes free. Ooh, he's for real.
Santa is magical.
Yeah. How
did your Santa Claus develop when you were first getting started? How long did it take you to sort of find the right rhythms for your performance, for your presence?
Probably was faster than most people because I've had so much putting on skits at camps.
And so you've been doing sort of theatrical stuff for a while.
Well, theatrical a little bit, but more it's just getting kids to get involved. Mm. And that was, you know, I have a master's in social work, in group work, not in casework. And using this talent made it much easier for me to see what Santa could do that I didn't agree with most Santas. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember seeing Santa as a kid? Did you ever have a Santa come visit you when you were young?
No, we were poor. Mm-hmm. And we never had a Santa come, but I was taken to see a Santa several times.
At the mall?
Yeah, but it's hard for me to remember because they're not mind-boggling things that happen. Mm-hmm. You know, when you just go and somebody gives you a gift, what are you going to remember? It's not something special. And from knowing what kids really developed with in other things, I realized I can do more than just give them a gift and take a picture. Although we take awfully good pictures.
You also went to Santa school, is that right?
I went to the Santa school. I'm not going to give them a big shout out.
Okay.
I thought that the Santa school, 20% of things that I could really use at a school, most of the people at this Santa school, maybe other Santa schools wouldn't be that much, but most of the people come back every year just to see the other Santas, and it's like a big fraternity. Hmm. And they had spent so much time learning about the reindeer. Well, we're never going to use that. Or we go to Toys R Us. And I can't give a shout-out for Toys R Us because most of the stuff is what the television tells them to buy. And few of the things I would want to give. And they would always spend lots of time there, and I would see nobody buys anything. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, they went to another store. There was a Christmas store. And they had all these old ornaments and all kinds of things from all over the world. And people loaded up things. So I could see that the values of all the stuff that is commercialized is not what I want to push.
You've been listening to Santa Ed. In a minute, he talks about what he does for the rest of the year when Santas are not in high demand.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is primarily a seasonal job. How many days a year do you actually work at the Santa gig?
Usually around Thanksgiving, and you have maybe 25 days. Hopefully someday I'll get a big job in July and film an advertisement that'll be done for many, many months, and I'll get all these residuals. That'd be nice. I've had two auditions. The same guy always beat me. One time, my own fault, I didn't understand what he wanted, and the other guy hit it right on the target. And another time, the guy just didn't see how good I would have been for him.
What are the busiest days during that Santa season? Does it get more frenetic as Christmas approaches?
This year, I'm using a marketer. I hate marketers, but this year I was so busy doing political things and doing some health things that I didn't do my phone calling, and I used a marketer. And this year, I've got around 60 leads for December 10th.
For December 10th alone.
That'll be the most every year, about 2 weeks in front of Christmas. The weekend, the Saturday, about 2 weeks in front of Christmas, it will be the biggest week.
Mm-hmm. How many appearances do you do in a really busy day?
Oh, real busy. One Christmas Eve, I started at 10 in the morning and I ended up at 11 at night and did 7 gigs.
Are all of those 2 hours long, or some of those just stop in for 5 minutes?
I think most of my Christmases are about an hour. Now, my 11 o'clock one, that year when I did 7, the guy just said, when you finish your last job, you come out to my house and get into the station wagon, fill your bag, and then walk in the door, go to the tree, put the presents down, fill a couple of stockings, and then on the way out, see, there'll be some cookies and milk, and you sit down, and you'll read the little letter that's been left for you, and then you leave. That's all I did, except for I saw the flash bulbs going off, and the father had woke up the kids. Kids, I hear Santa's outside. Come. And they hid up in the balcony, and they took these pictures, and they were believers. Oh, and then when I got out of sight where they couldn't look out the window, I would did Merry Christmas to all and to all a good night.
So what do you do for the rest of the year? Presumably you're not just up at the North Pole making toys.
I do lots of sort of volunteer type things, not usually commercially kind, but I find things to do. And I do a little bit of bartering stuff, and I live in a senior house and I try to help them out. But my main, from July on, I should be working at getting more gigs.
How does the season end? When do you stop? Is it over after Christmas?
Well, I have the 25th this year. Last year, I went to a party on Epiphany. That's like 12 days after Christmas. And so there are a few kings I get. Now, on Christmas Day, I get seldom gigs that when I do, I take them. But if I don't do that, then I go down to the Washington Hospital Center. They have the Holiday Project. At the Washington Center, they have it all over. The Holiday Project tries to go to every place where people would not get out for Christmas. They go to hospitals, they go to prisons, they go to hospices, and usually they go in and do Christmas caroling. And a friend of mine asked me to come carol. I said, no, I don't want to be a caroler, but I'll come as Christmas. And it was a big hit.
Do you ever shave your beard in the off season?
No.
No, but you trim it.
I just trim it basically to get it even. The one side seems to grow more than the other, and I try to trim it and make it a little bit neater, but very little.
Yeah.
And my beard doesn't get too long. Different people's beards grow differently.
Do you do anything for beard health? Do you apply beard oils or anything?
No. Maybe I should. Maybe I should take some vitamins or something to get more. I'd like to find something I could take to stop the black hairs from growing.
Just keep it all white.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what everyone wants from their beard.
No, just Santa's. When Santa has a real big, full, natural beard that has no gray hairs in it, this is God's blessing. You know, you're not going to get it.
Do you think you can charge more because you rock a natural beard?
Oh, definitely. If I'm hiring other people, I'll say that if you can have a full beard, it'll be $100 more.
It's a big difference.
Maybe that's not true. If you have a full beard and have some entertainment things, if you know how to do some stories and be a good storyteller and do some magical effects and maybe dance with the ladies and have lots of yarns you can do, then you're not a photo Santa and you get $100 at least more, maybe more than $100. Some of the photo Santas probably get one-third of what I would.
Wow. What are the most difficult parts of the job?
Good question. most difficult. To overcome some stereotypes that are I think are hurtful. And I really want to overcome some of these stereotypes of just thinking of getting a free prize.
Yeah. So it's not about Santa just as a delivery system for gifts, but rather as a bringer of joy, maybe?
Well, I want him to be I want Santa to be something that they would want to do in their own lives and help give them a tradition that when they get older, it'll be obvious that you help other people.
Yeah. If someone wanted to get started as Santa, if they wanted to start working in the field, where would they begin?
I would think you would try to find some company that has several Santas and or somebody that wanted you to rent a suit and do it, like I did. But there are some companies that use Santas and use those for a while, then figure out a way to do it yourself. Or then if you wanted to be a photo Santa, and they make see, the photo Santa makes maybe one-fourth his money at the malls, but he comes out at the end of the year, maybe two or three times as much money as me. If I wanted to be a mall
Santa. Because he's working all day.
He's working 7 days a week. He's working 8, maybe 10 hours a day.
Less time in transit, I assume.
No time in transit, right, because so many of the big companies get their Santas from two major companies that work for the whole United States, and many of them will want you to go to a different city, and they'll give you a hotel room, and I ask, why do you think they want you in a different city? Because people might recognize. No, they don't care if they recognize you. The reason they want you to go to a different city is that you won't say, oh, I'm sick because your friend is having a party or because you have some other obligation. And they know that they want you there every day. And if you're not there, they're stuck.
Do you have a favorite Christmas movie?
Oh, Miracle on 34th Street, clearly.
Why do you like that one?
Oh, he was talking about this spiritual thing. It's not just making money. It was just a great movie. And so many others are farces. And I love farces, but it didn't have the spiritual feeling that Miracle did.
So is that a movie that you have looked to over the years to inspire your own version of Santa?
I don't think so. I think I have had that already, but I really saw that he and I were on the same page.
Are there any films about Santa that you think present a bad image of Santa Claus?
They don't stay in my mind.
Sure.
That I know that, you know, the guy that falls off the roof and that he was so hard to believe and that he had it just was not believable.
Mm-hmm. What do you love about your job?
I guess the main things is one, the children idolize you. To be idolized is a nice thing to feel. And the second one, I really love when I see that I have put a message out that could be accepted. Mm. And that this message that is greater than the gift Santa, that I know that this has gotten through to people. When that happens, it's great.
Well, I'm so delighted that I get to say this, but Santa Claus, thank you for joining us in our studio today.
It was my pleasure.
The pleasure was all ours.
And I hope that you will go home and remember to be good this year.
I plan to.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
He wants to meet old Santa Claus.
I took my brother to the department store. He wanted to show Santa his Christmas list.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Working. I'm Jacob Brogan, and I am getting coal in my stocking this year. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the podcast, but only if you've been very good. Our email address is working@slate.com, and you can listen to past episodes at slate.com/working. That's our present to you. Working is produced and edited by Mickey Capper. All he wanted for Christmas was to meet Santa. Sometimes wishes do come true. Thanks to Afim Shapiro, who brings joy to the world and peace to his fellow podcast producers. And special thanks to everyone at Slate's DC office for helping us brainstorm questions and otherwise getting us into the spirit. Our executive producer is Steve Lichtai, and the chief content officer of the Panoply Network is Andy Bowers. May dreams of sugar plums dance through both of their heads.
Moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to object below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick I knew right away that it must be Saint Nick. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop his coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas, too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I pulled in my head and I was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all covered with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his sack. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work. He filled all the stockings, and he turned with a jerk, and laying a finger aside of his nose, with a nod of his head, up the chimney he rose.
You got that.
Okay. Up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh. To his team gave a whistle. Then away they all flew, like the down on a thistle. And I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, "Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night." I left out one. I left out part.
No, I think you got it.
No, I left out a good one.